Thank you, April. Thank you, Carrie, for inviting me here. I'll take you up on the offer to tackle me, because at 8:30 I have another presentation to give, so I need to get out of here. Okay. So over winter and growing season nitrous oxide emissions from cattle excrement and bedding. So a little bit of background here. Diet manipulation has been used to decrease enteric fermentation, and often by increasing protein and decreasing fiber content of the forage. Excreta composition as a result can be altered, particularly in terms of nitrogen. And the overwintering cattle, there are many ways of overwintering cattle, especially in temperate environments like we have in Canada and on the prairies, either extensive or intensive overwintering. But it's quite unsure of what type of emissions of N2O occur, if they even do occur, over the winter for these types of systems. So we have two simple questions here that we're going to cover a series of studies. First is diet manipulation to decrease enteric fermentation, increasing N2O emissions from excreta cattle. And then secondly, what are overwinter losses of N2O from excreta in extensive and intensive systems. So I'm going to start off with a study in southeast Manitoba called the Labrocque Pasture and Forage Study. This is the perimeter of the experimental field site, which is experiment done where we have backgrounding steers, so they would come onto the pasture somewhere towards the end of May, beginning of June, stick around till end of August, beginning of September. And pig slurry was added to this land to encourage forage production, particularly adding nitrogen and phosphorus. It was quite a nutrient-poor site. And we had treatments of a control, which was no pig manure, split, which was pig manure, half added in the fall, half added in the spring, and a single application of the hog manure in the springtime. And then we had two types of forage utilization, grazing and mechanical harvested forage. But one of the things that we saw pretty quickly when we added the manure was obviously a phenomenal growth response. And that growth response and the change in the quality of the forage, we could really see the output in terms of the feces of the cattle was quite impacted. It was quite runny, it was even green, things like that. So that's what got me thinking about saying what's happening here in terms of this diet manipulation. And the diet manipulation, obviously, in terms of the improved forage quality, was to increase the crude protein content to decrease enteric fermentation of my colleagues we're measuring from the cattle. So we set about adding the feces to soil. We collected it. This is Dennis, the master student, who collected the feces. He went chasing steers with a shovel, trying to pick up feces after them. He let them drop it first, and then he picked it up. And that was a lot of fun for him, I think. And there's Brad, a technician, and making cow patties, artificial cow patties that we would then use a static vented chamber to determine greenhouse gas emissions from them. And this is a patty from a paddock that the steers were grazing that was treated with manure. And you could see the color there, it's light green color there. It's kind of watery and stuff like that. The flies really love this stuff. They really jump in there immediately and so forth. And I don't have a picture. I should have put a picture of the control non-manured, but it physically looked quite different, the material, the feces. And there was quite a difference in the crude protein and the digestible fiber content as well. So just jumping straight to results, you see in we did this 2 years where we obtained the feces from the treatments and then placed it in the soil and measured the greenhouse gases. So day of the year and then N2O emissions. The single and split, so these are the manure treatments, you can see that the N2O emissions from the feces was encouraged. It actually, they bumped it up, whereas the control, this is still feces. It's not a background control. This is still got feces in it, and you can see it just wasn't manured. Very little N2O. And the same sort of thing in 2005, except it was really only the single application, the manure in the spring, that had quite a growth response and alteration in terms of the nitrogen content of the feces. And a fairly typical thing with N2O, of course, is that when the rains came, that's when the emissions came as well. So we deposited the feces around here in somewhere in June, and it took a little while with some rains to occur to wet up that manure and start the feces and get the N2O emitted. So we then had Dennis chase cattle for urine, because we figured if the feces had responded with greater crude protein, how about the urine? Okay, there must be difference in nitrogen contents of the urine. So it was a little difficult. We had to weigh the animals in chutes and so forth, so he invented this little cup contraption to try to obtain the urine from the steers, and that was a complete failure. If you can expect, I don't know if the steers became a little bit shy. I think maybe they wanted to go into a room and give them a specimen container, and maybe they might perform better. But in this case, we did get enough to know a bit about what the nitrogen content of the urine was between those treatments with the hog manure applied to the forage. So we were able then to create our own urine. Okay, we made an artificial urine based on analyses of the samples that we were able to obtain from the steers. So that's what we did. We made our own artificial nitrogen that had a full complement of different nitrogen compounds that were in the urine. And here are students applying urine to chambers. And so we made the urine, went out, added a liter to the areas of the chambers. And the N2O emissions were higher with the urine than from the feces. And the background here is a true control, so there's no urine added here. This should say urine, not feces up top there. The low was a low concentration of nitrogen that we would expect in the unmanured forage treatments from the steers. And there's emissions, there's one high point here, but coming up and then down like that. And then the medium concentration, higher. And then the very high, which mimics the manured single application composition of the nitrogen, was a delay, and then it emitted for a little bit longer than the other treatments. So we can see the composition of the nitrogen in the urine in response to the increased forage quality with the manure application also resulted in the urine N2O emissions. So you quite see it here that the single in both years tested produced more N2O, but the N2O emissions were much more from the urine, and there was an increase with more higher urine in concentration from our simulated urine response. So we take home message from this was the urine emissions of N2O were quite responsive to diet. We also looked at dry distillers grain solubles impact on emissions of excreta, and this is Gwen Donahoe here, master student, collecting feces from cattle that were fed DDGS. They were fed and then in the field, and then brought into a lab and held for a couple of days and still fed there to obtain feces, and also with catheters obtain urine directly from the animals. Not the most pleasant of jobs. I'm glad that they did that. These were mature open dry beef cows with three diets of 0, 10, and 20% supplementation of DDGS to hay. The material collected, Gwen placed out in the field on a grass soil where there was urine, feces, simulated bedding. So she actually compiled and made her own bedding, adding straw to the materials to simulate a bedding pack, then added that as well. And then a background of no addition of excreta or bedding from those three diets of DDGS. So take-home message that we could see here, first of all, was that the emissions came from the urine. The feces actually almost no emissions, and the bedding pack, slight emissions from the lowest DDGS. So the diet with no DDGS actually had some emissions from the bedding pack, but it's all about the urine. And the higher the DDGS content, the 20 and 10%, you can really see the N2O emissions. Of course, the emissions were stimulated because of a rainfall in early summer. So similar to the previous experiment with the steers and the brokery, the urine really emissions with the urine, and as the nitrogen content of the urine with the DDGS supplementation increased, we had more emissions of the N2O. In terms of the, you can see here the cumulative emissions, quite a bit from the urine in terms of milligrams of N per meter squared over the measurement period. We can see the feces actually was slightly negative and the pack pretty close to zero. And if we look at the nitrogen content of that urine in terms of total nitrogen, it's 2.5 times increase with the dry distiller's grain that was added to the diet. And so that was basically the response there. How are we doing for time? 6 minutes. Okay, I better hurry up still. Okay, so we have various overwintering strategies available to us in Canada in terms of extensive and intensive with dry lots. So most I've been talking here simulating the extensive system, the dry lot. We'll get into that as well. And then out in the field, we have various options as well between swath bale, stockpiled, and crop residue type grazing. One of the particular ones that's hot right at the moment is bale grazing in our area, so we were looking at that. So we have a Gwen Zuner PhD with bale grazing, and here's the site that she was working at with four paddocks with bale grazing, and we were able to put chambers out. These animals we brought in every week, and we were able to collect feces and urine from them and then put that out in winter to figure out if there was any emissions. As far as we knew, nobody had done that before in the wintertime. So here are the results. Basically, around day 100, it started to warm up above zero, and before that, we had no emissions of N2O. So there was no emissions of N2O depositing the fresh urine and feces from the animals. It wasn't until early summer with some rains that N2O occurred, and it occurred from the urine, not surprisingly. But look at the methane. I'm not sure if this is real. I think it's real. But there was methane occurring over the wintertime with the freshly deposited. It must have been off-gassing, maybe, from the feces. And you can see the CO2 is no activity. There was just no bubble activity. They were completely frozen, the soil, so therefore no activity. So that was out in the field. Now what happens in the dry lot situation in the winter time? So we have cattle on bedding packs. So we just move them out to make our measurements, either with static vented chambers here, or this contraption here looks like a yurt from Mongolia. And it's a dynamic flux chamber that we've used in combination with an FTIR multi-gas analyzer. So some of the results that we've seen here in terms of N2O, this is with study bed in chambers. Not much in the winter times, a little bit here maybe, but you can start seeing it becomes variable and so forth in the early summer on two pens. And it was really after day 100, there's the thaw point. Nothing at thaw, but it took a while. Took a while. I was quite surprised we didn't get something immediately at thaw. In soil, we do. So I was expecting to see that here as well, but we didn't. And look at the methane follows the same sort of thing. Nothing over the winter, and it perks up just in early summer. At this point here, we took the material off the pens and stockpiled it. So I think here was rains, and the pack became wet. There was concrete on the pens, and I think that's what was urging that. In those emissions. The dynamic chamber, same sort of thing. Nothing over winter, and then we had emissions for nitrous oxide and methane later on towards the early summer. So it's good news. Doesn't seem to be much happening in the winter time, and it didn't stimulate thaw emissions as well. So that's pretty good. So it's something that we're going to be adding to our farm budgets and so forth. In 2004, similar thing. This is a static vented chambers. Again, once the packs warmed up after a few weeks and became moist, that's when we had emissions of N2O and the methane. So just wrapping this up, so what we found was improved diet quality did increase N2O emissions. So what we're doing now is combining that as an offset in terms of the reduced enteric emissions and then budgeting in the increase in N2O from the excreta. The urine emissions were most responsive to diet in terms of N2O. No N2O emissions during the frozen period, and which was good from our standpoint. We're going to start incorporating that into our budgets. No evidence of thaw emissions from excreta. I was expecting that maybe some nitrate would be present, and then as it thawed, that the denitrification would result in N2O that we see, like we see in soil. It didn't happen. And dry lot pack emitted N2O and methane in summer. So the bottom line here is get rid of the pack as soon as possible, as soon as it warms up. Get it out of there. Get it onto land, actually, I think, and that would be the release fewer emissions than keep it to produce primarily that all that methane. And the dynamic flux and static vented chambers gave similar flux patterns, which was really good that they corroborated each other and were continuing to improve the dynamic flux chamber system. So acknowledgements, students, Dennis and Gwen, technicians, Brad, Susanna, and then, of course, funders, and thank you to you for being here so early in the morning, the invitation to speak here. So thank you very much. I didn't say it.
Oh, okay. And the amount of rain, you said that rain had triggered some falls, but I just wondered if it was a wet season or not. And did you calculate the emission factors?
Yeah. Okay, those are a lot of questions. The soil types, two different soil types. The Labroque Pasture Project was on a coarse textured soil, calcareous soil, that had phenomenal drainage. So the feces itself dried out very quickly, so it needed moisture continuously to keep it wet. So that's why we got emissions after the rains. Like they could wet up that feces, the paddy, and it was at that interface of the paddy and the soil that I think where you could see that there was action happening. The other thing is that soil does have a gradient of moisture because of groundwater height to the surface. And the publication from that, the 2010, shows how the effect of the moisture gradient on the emissions. As obviously, as it gets wetter, it was more N2O. But at some point, as the water table almost approached the surface, there was no N2O, and it was methane that started being emitted. And then I forget your other two questions. No, they weren't wet seasons, actually. They weren't, no. They weren't. But the rains of about 3/4 of an inch to an inch were what needed to be done to kickstart the emissions. And then was the third question?
Emission factors,
yes. We have calculated the emission factors. And they're quite low, and they're a lot lower than what IPCC and various other things are using in models. So we do have, I didn't stress the composition of the feces in the urine in terms of the nitrogen, but we have those calculated and we've published, that one in Labroque has, the other work is being written up now. So the emission factors are a lot lower than we were expecting.
We don't know offhand the percent nitrogen in the urine of
lots of N2O. Oh yeah, it's, we're talking like 0.1%. Yeah, compared to fertilizer, actually.
Hi, did you measure the average daily gain of the animals? I asked this because if you have an improved diet, then you expect to be higher average daily gain. So per unit of increase in product, what would be the N2O emissions expected from that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, our colleague Kim Ominski has all that data in terms of the daily gains and also the enteric fermentation. But she used the SF6 holster method. So we do have that. So that's what we're doing now is in terms of trying to put this all together and looking at the balance there. So I just wanted to stress here today of the importance of that impact of trying to improve the things on the animal performance, and then there's an impact actually on the hind end and what happened from soil. And now comes the budgeting time. It's a bit difficult though, because then we need to know the outputs, right? Outputs of the feces and the urine and so forth. We can calculate the outputs from when we bring them into the metabolism units indoors from outdoors, and assume that hold true for what they were doing outside. And since we have some of that. That's a good question. So what if we were to basically go back to the same patch of urine and let's say the next year and added some more urine to it, what would happen? It's a good question. I don't know if the microbes would have been conditioned and then they produce more or less into it. I'm not sure. The thing with the urine is that we're not sure what the, you know, around, let's say, waterers and supplements, minerals and things like that. Of course, they're peeing and pooing around those areas. So those areas get compounded. But oftentimes, there's not much grass in those areas, but they're trampled as well, right? So you think you've picked up on a good point here, the unknown area that we have. So right now, we're kind of simulated just the grassed area, where because of the densities are fairly low in the extensive systems, they're probably not. The frequency of superimposed of urine is probably fairly low, but in these congregation areas is probably a huge, huge thing, yeah. Great, thank you.